The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, good morning. This is Wake Up with Randy Corcoran. I hope you're awake, but I am not Randy Corcoran. You probably figured that out by now. He does have dulcet tones, but a little bit deeper than mine. I am Deborah Flores sitting in for Randy Corcoran this morning. He will be in the station 9 to noon. I know it's going to be a great show. So glad to be here. Grateful to be able to sit in and talk to this great audience this morning on 710 KNUS. A little bit about myself. I am the host of the nationally syndicated radio program Bring It Up, heard on our sister station 94.7 FM The Word. That's on Saturdays right here on at 3 p.m. if you want to tune in then. But as I always say, I love being here on KNUS because you guys are just awesome listeners. You are engaged. You're involved. As we were talking in the first hour, you last season a year ago when the Colorado session was in place, you stepped up, you showed up, and you made your voices heard, and we had some great victories. We were able to stop things like injection sites. We were able to push back on 300, which is the right to squat, which is not humane for homeless people. We made our voices heard on comprehensive sex ed. Although it went through, it was pretty much heard loud and clear, and we all got activated and connected. Well, guess what? Unfortunately, just like we put away the Christmas tree, and I'm sad to see the holiday season end, we are now looking to the Colorado session starting this coming Wednesday, January 8th. Hey, you know what? I appreciate those civil servants who serve us, but it scares me when many people begin to legislate on our behalf because they're not actually serving us. They're going to start the session coming up January 8th. We're going to talk about some of the things that will be coming our way. But as we also know, one of the biggest things coming in 2020 is the presidential election. It's starting to really heat up. I think the Democrats in the House are trying to slow down the impeachment process, handing over to the Senate, because that's pretty much all they got. When you look at the lineup of the candidates running for the presidential nomination from the Democratic Party, none of them are doing very well. Biden is going down in numbers. He's still the front runner, but he barely has over 30%. He's actually decreasing. So is Elizabeth Warren. So it's going to be interesting to see. But as we look to the 2020 election, I think what happened in the last few days is also going to be very significant. President Trump, they used to call Reagan the Teflon president because nothing seemed to stick. I think we would call President Trump the pre-vetted president. No one expected him to come in without some personal baggage and some rough edges. And what we're finding is everything that they're trying to throw at him is not really sticking where it counts, which is with independents, with Republicans. Those who are diehard on the left, they will do anything they can to get him out of office. But you know what? He was certainly presidential this week. Let's talk about what happened. As I mentioned in the first segment, my background, although I was raised here in Colorado and Lowry Air Force Base and proud to be so, was Miss Colorado, proud to represent this state and be second runner up to Miss America. We came that close to winning. I was a bronze medalist, but, you know, proud to represent Colorado nonetheless. Well, what we see happening here is something pretty impressive. This last week, we saw President Trump really rise up and be presidential. What do I mean by that? When I was mentioning my Hollywood background, we all remember the movie 13 Hours about the Benghazi travesty, where then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told the troops to stand down when they wanted to go and protect that outpost, diplomatic outpost. They wanted to protect that ambassador, but they were told no. Wow. Right now, if I was still in Hollywood, I would want to make the movie of what happened this last week, because this is where we finally get to see our amazing military do what they do so well. We probably remember this past week what happened. Iranian-backed, I won't even call them protesters. I would call them assailants. They were a terrorist mob. Attacked our embassy. But what I loved seeing was the footage instead of those military helicopters setting down and our troops pouring out without hesitation. The outcome was completely different than in Benghazi, because we have a president who was willing to let the military do what they do so well. Well, it didn't just stop there. As we know, first of all, earlier in October, al-Baghdadi was taken out because we had a president who said, yes, go for it, didn't waffle, didn't hesitate. And our troops did what they do so well. They took out someone who was responsible for the misery, death, suffering of millions of people, not just Americans, but also Middle Eastern people. They took out al-Baghdadi. Well, after our embassy was attacked, it became very clear that the person behind it, General Qasem Soleimani, is someone who has been behind many attacks. And our president let the military do what they did so well. He let them take this person out. Now, predictably, there's been reactions, and we're going to talk about the right reactions, the predictable reactions, and the darn right crazy reactions since this happened. But let's just put a little perspective on that. The perspective is this. Let's find out who Iranian General Qasem Soleimani is. He is not as some of the mainstream media have portrayed him. Their headlines went something like this: revered and respected Iranian leader assassinated by America. No, let's talk about who he really is. This gentleman, I use that lightly, I shouldn't actually say that. This person was suspected of directing the mob of hundreds of Iranian-backed militants who stormed our embassy last week. That's only the latest in what he's done. He was not on Iranian soil when he was taken out by our drone. No, he was on Iraqi soil. Why? Because he was there directing the attack on our embassy. Now, that would be enough for our military to say, you know what, that's someone who has attacked us. So retaliation and taking him out is enough. But that's not where his history ends. He was a long-running leader of the elite intelligence wing called the Quds Force, responsible for supporting terrorist proxies across the Middle East. He reported directly to the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. And this organization that he led, Soleimani led, was designated a terror group in 2007. So let's be honest and truthful about this. He was a terrorist leader. He guided an estimated group of about 20,000 fighters, his militia, that were all over the Middle East, purposely targeting and attacking Americans. In fact, one of the reasons that our president gave the order to go ahead and take him out was because they had true intelligence that he was about to target numerous U.S. citizens in that region. The plans were there. That's why he was traveling all over. Here's the other thing that I think is so remarkable and important about what they did. As we've heard over the last few days from people in the know, Soleimani was traveling all over with impunity, truly believing that he was untouchable. What message was sent over the last several administrations? You can target U.S. citizens, you can attack U.S. facilities, and we will do nothing. I think we all know how that works out. Appeasement leads to more attacks. This is the first time, and I have no doubt it was an extreme wake-up call for the Iranian government, for terrorist organizations, that you can't do that anymore. You cannot kill Americans anymore. You cannot attack our embassies anymore and expect for nothing to happen. And this came after a U.S. contractor. And that, by the way, that term dehumanizes the fact that this was a U.S. citizen working legitimately in a foreign country, and Soleimani's forces and he personally were responsible for his death. So you know what? It stops right there. So here's my, that was my response, by the way, which was a big old hoo-ah to all of my military friends out there. What were some of the other responses? I mean, they do really actually go from the logical to the crazy. So I love Dan Crenshaw, who serves very well in Washington, former military hero. He talked about how Soleimani was the world's preeminent sponsor of terrorism and how he was responsible for providing IEDs to Shia militias in Iraq that were used to kill hundreds of Americans. By the way, U.S. State Department said 17% of all U.S. personnel deaths in Iraq from 2003 to 2011, 17% were directly responsible to Soleimani. David French, by the way, he explains why, unlike what the Democrats are saying, no congressional authority was necessary for this. The reason why is this. I love what David French says. He said, Iranian-backed militias attacked U.S. troops lawfully present in a combat zone under valid legal authorities. It was all legal what we were doing internationally. More of America's military response isn't limited to immediate self-defense or tit for tat. It can act to remove the threat, and that threat includes enemy commanders. So our commander-in-chief, yes, that is the title of our president, our commander-in-chief did exactly what he should within his constitutional rights. So don't you just love, by the way, that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are so very, very upset that they were not notified ahead of time? I'm sorry, but my trust in them not letting the information out is down to zero. That would be like saying before D-Day, hi, media, who will let this out everywhere, we're going to land on this date, on this beach. We succeeded because nothing was leaked. I appreciate, and by the way, I don't think I have a right to know everything. We elect people to make these decisions. I trust our military to act on the intelligence they have that I don't need to know. Need to know basis. I'm sorry, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, you did not need to know. You did not need congressional authority, and you would have leaked it. Obviously, those who are running for president on the Democratic side, they are calling it hugely escalatory move in an already dangerous region. Okay, that was Joe Biden. I have a newsflash, Joe Biden. It was a dangerous region because of Soleimani. Yes, there will be probably some repercussions because they're going to have to. But the world is less dangerous now. I got to say, I equate this to this. As a Hollywood actress for a period of time, let me claim again, I am from Colorado. This is my home. I am not a Californian. But as a Hollywood actress, there are certain things you have to have. You have your agent, you have your manager, you have your headshots, and you have your stalker. So I had a stalker. I know what that mentality is. It is an appeasement mentality. You step further and further back because you're afraid if you do anything that maybe you will set a crazy person off and they will somehow attack you. I finally stopped the situation when I realized this. I did nothing to deserve that intrusion onto my life. And it was fear that made me give up more and more and more and more of my rights. I'm so grateful that starting 2020, we have a president that does not react in fear of what might happen. He reacts in the fact that this person, Soleimani, was someone who was responsible for the deaths of thousands, probably millions of people we may never know, and was about to attack our forces and our American citizens again. When we stand up, when we stand strong, bullies stop. Happened in my own life. It's happening in our country, and I'm grateful for that. And by the way, coming up in when Randy's with us from 9 to noon, he just let me know that he's going to have one of the Benghazi heroes in at 10, John Tig Tegan. So I'm grateful. I'm going to tune in and listen to that because those gentlemen did an amazing job in Benghazi without being given any backing or freedom to act by the current president at the time, President Obama, or Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. I am grateful because I grew up in a military family. My husband is a former paratrooper in the 82nd Airborne. For all of our brave military out there, I am so grateful we have a commander-in-chief that will let you do what you do so well, which is stand in the gap to protect American lives. You are not being fettered or hindered by false rules of engagement, or maybe we should have called them under Obama rules of disengagement. That's what happened previously, which is why we have heroes like the Benghazi hero that will be joining Randy Corporan. Okay, I'm going to take a deep breath because I just want to let out a big old hoo-ah over what happened this week. You know what? And I trust the finest fighting force in the world, our U.S. military, to protect us as we step into this new phase of stopping Iran's attempt to take over the Middle East and exporting of terrorism everywhere. So that's what we're looking forward to in 2020. I think it has changed completely the complexion of the presidential race. And I think that is just going to make the Democrats miserable. And honestly, that might just be a little bit fun to watch. So yes, as James said, I think their heads are blowing at the moment. And impeachment what? I think that pales in comparison to what we've seen America do to keep the world safe. And by the way, it's not just for Americans. It's for those in the Middle East who have been terrorized themselves in their own homes. Time for that to stop. No, we're not the world's police. We're not going to take over everything. But when there are individual actors that we have intel on who are not in their own land, who are there in foreign soil perpetrating death and destruction, then we did what was right and good. Okay, so looking forward to in 2020, we have that. We also have a lot of other things that are happening right here locally. As I said, the Colorado session is going to start on January 8th. Batten down the hatches, get ready to make your voices heard because we need to do that. We're going to talk about some of the good legislation that might be coming up. There's a bill that's going to be coming up, I'll talk about a little bit later in the show, that is going to protect parental rights. It's an answer to comprehensive sex ed, so parents can be informed. Also coming up, we have a bill. Well, I don't know if it's a bill, actually. It's an initiative that's going to be a ballot initiative that's going to be on the ballot in November, if enough signatures are collected. I think we're very close. A friend of ours, Juliana Day, has been backing this. And this is the Due Date Too Late ballot initiative. What I'm finding out is a lot of people don't know what the actual laws are, or it would stop immediately. For instance, in Colorado, we are one of only 7 states that allows abortion up until the moment of birth for any reason at all. Now, whether you are pro-choice or pro-life, that is radical. That is radical. And by the way, as we look to the election coming forward, that is a radical position that has been embraced by the entire field of Democratic candidates. It's almost as though that is one of the badges and litmus tests that they all feel like they have to wave. If they wave a flag for the Democratic Party now, it is lockstep radical abortion policy. As I said, it doesn't matter whether you're pro-choice or pro-life. 75% of Americans do not want abortion after the first trimester. Why? Because, you know what we've been talking about a lot this show? Facts versus feelings. Facts versus feelings. The fact is, babies are now viable at 22 weeks. That means if at that point in time, a woman is having a health issue, or maybe she decides she doesn't want this, she's waited until 22 weeks to decide she doesn't want this baby. At that point in time, what is the most humane thing to do? Go ahead and deliver the baby, because now that child is viable. If there's a health issue, deliver the baby at that time and save the mother's life and save the baby's life. Well, there's a bill coming up, coming up that will be on the ballot November 2020 called Due Date Too Late. Well, coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to talk about some of the myths that are out there in the culture, because we're going to be joined by Allison Centofante. She's from Live Action, organization started by Lila Rose, that's out there really changing the cultural conversation and informing people about the facts. What is most humane for women and children? And we'll talk about this ballot initiative that's coming up. So don't go anywhere. I'm Deborah Flores, sitting in for Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.
We now return to Wake Up with Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Good morning. This is Wake Up with Randy Corcoran. But you can wake up with Randy Corcoran at 9. Now you're waking up with Deborah Flores sitting in for Randy Corcoran. Well, we're having a great conversation about what's coming up in 2020. And one of the things we talked last segment about was there's going to be a ballot initiative here in Colorado in 2020 called Due Date Too Late. I think so much happens in our culture because people just don't know. And I think when people know, 80% of well-meaning people, whether they're pro-choice or pro-life, Democrat or Republican, whatever your walk of life, I think we can come together and agree on 80% of these topics. If we actually get to have that conversation, because we've got a culture that's vested in keeping us from having that conversation. One thing that people may not know is that right here in Colorado, as I was mentioning, we're one of only 7 states where you get an abortion anytime, all the way up until the moment of birth for any reason. I think the majority of Americans, well, we know the majority of Americans, 75% don't want abortion after the first trimester. So let's talk about that. Let's bring it up. And here to have this conversation with me, I'm so glad to be joined by Allison Centofante. She is the Director of External Affairs with Live Action, a great organization that is getting out there, changing the cultural conversation. And she's also a friend. Allison, thanks for joining me here on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Deb.
Yes. Hey, I remember last time I saw you, we were standing in front of the Supreme Court when the NIFLA versus Becerra case was being heard, and you were, you know, helping organize this rally that I was asked to host. And you're one of the real warriors because we were out there, I think it was sub-freezing temperature with ice wind. I think my hair froze, and if I'd bent it, it probably would have snapped off. So, so you're always out there fighting the good fight, Allison.
Thank you. Yeah, we were defending pregnancy resource centers that day, and it was wonderful.
Oh, it was so exciting. I remember the fact that, for people who don't know the case, it was basically in California, Becerra being the Attorney General of California, was telling pregnancy resource centers they had to basically advertise for abortion in their clinics. That's not a really even an abortion issue. That's a free speech issue. But fortunately, the court came down on the right side of that case, and you were a big part of that. So, well, Allison, I want to talk to you because, you know, I mentioned a little bit here about Colorado, but there's a real movement across the country we've seen in the last couple of years, where we're seeing what I would call common sense regulation that the majority of Americans probably would agree on. Can you just give us a quick overview of some of the things that have been happening?
Sure, absolutely. Well, 2019 was a big year in the pro-life movement. If we think back to this time last year in January, you've got things going on like New York lighting up the Empire State Building in pink to celebrate the Reproductive Health Act there, which essentially allowed abortion through all 9 months for any reason. Very similar to Colorado's abortion policy, actually. You had people like Governor Kathy Tran and Governor Ralph Northam making really callous comments about preborn lives. And America woke up and said, is this really how we treat our children? And there's really fascinating studies and data that came from those conversations showing that, like you said in the intro, as people learn about how far along we allow abortions in this country, just how lackadaisical we are with the reasoning for that they move from being more pro-abortion to more pro-life. And in fact, interestingly enough, one of the fastest growing changes is in the under 40 Democrat demographic, which I'm fascinated by. As they're educated on what abortion is and how we as a society treat preborn lives in a country that has thousands of pregnancy resource centers, which you and I defended at the Supreme Court today, that has these modern markers for viability, for when babies feel pain and are ready to come and support these newborns. Yes. When they learn, they change their minds, and maybe they don't become fully pro-life yet, but they absolutely, it puts enough of a stone in their shoe to mess with their conscience to say something's wrong here.
Well, absolutely. And how we first got involved, my husband and I, is we made a film about partial birth abortion, which was banned eventually under President Bush because it was so incredibly horrific. We thought, surely this only happens in a civilized country if people don't know. And what we found out afterwards, it was screened at the Capitol building and at the March for Life and all over the place. But where it has had the biggest showings is actually on college campuses. I think this younger generation really is driven by a sense of mission and purpose and compassion. We just need to show them something that they can champion right here in our own backyard, because I think the facts are really important. You know, what do you think is the reason why there's so much movement towards life, especially in the Democratic grouping under 40?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, I truly believe the veil has been removed on one side of this. Now, Live Action, who I work for, is bipartisan. We'll work with anyone on this life issue. We encourage both sides to see the reality of this issue. Mm-hmm. But we have right now, during an election year, a Democrat platform that is fully in support of abortion through all 9 months, which is way farther than the majority of Americans are.
Right.
So the Democrat Party has kind of posted their flag so far in the camp of abortion for any reason, with no compassion, no concern, a desire to see less safety regulations on the facilities, a desire to see more funding going towards this practice, that the majority of Americans say no. You know, I'm not that far pro-abortion. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing common day Americans really doing their research, jumping online. I'm encouraged when I hear people go, I had no idea until I found Live Action or Live Action News or some other pro-life article written. I had no idea. So people are waking up. I'm happy about that. And just like you said, there's people coming together, like it's happening in Colorado, to do something, to do the right thing, to protect some of these lives. We want to protect them all, but we as a pro-life movement have always come to the table with creative, innovative ideas to say, look, like you said, where can we meet at 80%, right?
Yes.
Can we talk about abortion after 22 weeks, which is potential for viability, a point in pregnancy where the child can feel pain? So we can talk about that great ballot initiative happening there, but I'm so inspired by it, mm-hmm. and people coming together to really stop these late term painful abortions.
Oh, absolutely. When you see the Democratic platform right now, I think of what happened here last session in Colorado, and I watched firsthand this huge lobbying arm of Planned Parenthood really just pressuring the Democratic representatives here. That I watched them, and my heart for a moment actually went out to them. They are so firmly held by this huge money source that comes from Planned Parenthood. I was in one Senate session where the Planned Parenthood lobbyist went up during the hearing and whispered in the ear of the senator that was over the hearing, the chairperson, and I found out that they were afraid to even step out from the power of Planned Parenthood, or they probably wouldn't be reelected. What do you say to that, the political power of Planned Parenthood, and what do we do about it?
Absolutely. Well, Planned Parenthood is the nation's largest abortion corporation. It gets 1.2 to 1.5 million taxpayer dollars every single day in this country, and it's built out a Goliath business, and you see that, and I hear that every day from people on the ground that are fighting the good fight. This is a Goliath organization, and it's because we're funding them with our tax
right.
dollars. So that has to stop first if we're going to actually have a conversation with our legislators without these big corporations going in and whispering in their ears, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the sickest part of that is when we fund them with our taxpayer dollars, Deborah, as you know, it frees up their mega Hollywood donors to give their money to their political action committees.
Right.
And those political action committees are giving over $30 million in elections to pro-abortion candidates. So it really is, you know, you are up against a well-organized, well-funded beast, but that's why the pro-life movement is growing, because we're seeing that and we're responding with organization, coordination, prayers, finances, to say, look, you know, we're going to fight for life. We can wake up every day and fight for life,
mm-hmm.
and hope that you'll join us one day. But we hear that from staffers, from American constituents, saying, look, you know, I go visit my member of Congress once a year. Those Planned Parenthood representatives are in there every month.
Yes.
And that's something we need to realize is what is being heard and told and pushed. And what Colorado is doing and other states across the country is they're stepping up and saying, look, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, Roe v. Wade is the Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion in this country. if that's reversed, overturned, reconsidered, it will all go back to the states. Mm-hmm. So some states, like New York, like I mentioned, like Colorado, have tried, and they've said, we're so pro-abortion, we'll allow abortion through all 9 months. Other states are going to say, no, if and when that happens, I want you to know we're going to protect them all. We're going to advocate for adoption. We're going to advocate for more resources for moms and families. We're going to take care of every citizen born here.
Right.
And we love that. We're encouraging the good, and we're working to make that happen in other states as well.
Well, and those are some of the myths. Many people think that if Roe v. Wade is overturned, abortion will be outlawed. That's not the case. As you said, it will go back to the states. And the other thing that a lot of people don't realize, it was Doe v. Bolton afterwards that defined what the health of the mother was, which was social, economic, physical, mental health. So in other words, it opened the door for abortion for any reason. Even if, you know, a woman was having trouble with her boyfriend socially, then that was a reason for it. So I think there's a lot of myths about abortion that people don't realize. And to your point, Planned Parenthood, I sat there in this Senate hearing and watched my money work against me. And what I love about, you know, Allison, you were talking about supporting, you know, pregnancy resource centers. They operate without a single dime of taxpayer money, and they support women who have unplanned pregnancies versus Planned Parenthood pretty much. What is I don't remember specifically, but Planned Parenthood, the majority of their money, or the money that's raised, or their services, what is the percentage that's actually for abortion and the percentage that is for what they say health services?
Yeah, and I'm wondering if some of your listeners are like, oh, it's 3%. I've heard it's 3%. And we've all heard that abortions are only 3% of what Planned Parenthood does. They've done a pretty good job drilling that into our heads. It's a complete lie, and it's been debunked not just by us at Live Action, but by the Washington Post, who gave it four Pinocchios, by Slate.com, a pro-abortion entity. So take a look, see how they fudge the numbers to get those statistics. They count, you know, handing out 10,000 condoms on a college campus as 10,000 services equal to abortion. So that's how you get a lower number.
Wow.
But they know, they've said, they've made clear. In fact, on their very Twitter this year, they said, abortion is our number one priority.
Mm-hmm.
That is what they've made clear, both in the way that they've run their business, the way they've set it up for finances, and the way they advocate. They don't provide mammograms, which I'm still continually shocked by, when one in six women will be affected by breast cancer in the United States. They don't have a single mammogram machine in the whole country. You can go look. You won't find it there. They, you know, they can do maybe a pap smear here and there, but those are services you can get elsewhere. They know this is what they want to do. They want abortions. They've turned down deals both from the president's daughter, who offered more federal funding if they'll stop doing abortions.
Right.
They said no. They've turned down money in the forms of Title X grants that said, you know, you can have $60 million a year as long as you don't use the money to perform or do abortions. They said no. I mean, they are making these strategic decisions to make abortion their number one priority. And what's sad about that is, for any woman or man listening that thinks that that's a necessity for a woman's empowerment and success, I have to push back and say it is never a sign of a society's strength when we tell women that the only way to succeed and to be empowered is to kill your child.
Yes. No, I
agree.
That
is not the answer.
Well, and
we must do better on that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love the group Feminists for Life, because what they say is, we missed a window when Roe v. Wade was being pushed as the solution, when we could have said, okay, how about instead, as a society, we put together programs where a woman can go to college and keep her child and have childcare on college campuses? Or let's come up with support systems, which, by the way, a lot of pregnancy resource centers do. They do care about the woman, unlike what, you know, the pro-abortion side would say. They actually provide resources and support afterwards. I completely agree. I think we've come so far from the old mantra of rare, safe, and, you know, legal, rare, and safe, to now the Democratic platform being anytime, anywhere. And as you've said, there are some places now where the laws do not even require a doctor to perform the abortion. Is that correct?
Right. Doctor in person. There's telemed abortions, which is essentially you can Skype with a healthcare professional. And the abortion industry is moving in the direction of and fighting for non-doctors, non-medical professionals, to do and perform surgical abortions. You've got people like Sue Thayer, who was a Planned Parenthood director, manager for decades, who saw this coming down the line and raised the red flag and said, look, they were training like college students and non-medical staff on how to do an abortion, and it's incredibly dangerous. But the reality is you're finding less and less doctors and OBGYNs who actually want to perform this procedure because it's I've read and I've seen them opening up and realizing that this is not what they entered the practice for.
Yes.
So the industry is moving to allow others to perform this. It's very dangerous and it's unneeded. We as a society can support these babies, support these moms, and we can do so much better. And I think 2020 will see that. I think with people, pro-lifers coming together in states like Colorado, if you want more information, you can go to dostatetoolate.com. And I was inspired by this website because it allows you to sign up to gather signatures for the petition. So easy. Don't be afraid of door knocking on strangers' doors. Think of opportunities like, you know, setting out a table outside of your inside the church lobby and letting people know about this opportunity. Areas that are already full of people. This is a way to just educate, to inform, and save lives, which is really, really empowering, encouraging. It's fun to hear. And we're going to meet people who were saved from this initiative if the coalition can get 125,000 signatures before March 4th.
Yes, I love it. So go to Due Date Too Late. We're heading to a break. Allison, and then why don't you also tell them the website for live action?
Sure, it's liveaction.org.
Great. Thank you so much, Allison. I love being able to talk about things because we have freedom of speech for a reason. I truly believe whether you're pro-choice or pro-life, we can agree on 80% of this. And there's common sense things that are happening. Allison, thanks for joining the show today. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Deborah.
Okay. Hey, coming up in the next segment, I want to hear from you. Callers, call in to 303-696-1971. What do you think about this topic? What are you dreading in 2020? What are you looking forward to? Don't go anywhere. I'm Deborah Flores, sitting in for Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Now, back to Wake Up with Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Good day, sunshine.
Well, welcome back to the show. I had to listen to those words a little bit because the sun is indeed shining and it's a beautiful morning. Here we are on Saturday, January 4th, 2020. Yes, I have to keep reminding myself of that. I'm Deborah Flores sitting in for Randy Corporan this morning. We're having a great conversation. If you've missed any of it, by the way, go to our website, 710canus.com, where you'll be able to hear the podcast. Talking about the year in review, talking about what we have coming forward as well. And in the last segment, we were talking to Allison Centofante of Live Action, and we're discussing one of the things coming up this next year is this ballot initiative, which will hopefully make it onto the ballot, which is Due Date Too Late. By the way, if you want to chime in on this topic, you can call in at 303-696-1971. And we're talking about how when I truly believe this, when the majority of Americans are allowed to come together and have a real conversation, we will agree on 80% of things. I truly believe that. But there are so many forces in our country right now that are vested, heavily vested in keeping us from talking to one another. They can, you know, work their way into power if they can paint one side as evil and vilified. And when we talk to one another, we find out that just isn't the case. Generally, we all want the same thing. And you know what? We're talking about abortion. A lot of people stay away from that because it can be so heightened. I mean, actually, believe it or not, when I was Miss Colorado and I ended up being second runner-up to Miss America, one of my judges, by the way, was Donald Trump, not president at the time, but he was sitting right there in front of me. And I got asked a question on stage that you say you'll never be asked. For anyone who thinks that I got asked what my favorite color was, let me tell you, the woman who placed first runner-up was a Rhodes Scholar. The woman who won is now a veterinarian. And I was a President Scholar. I have to say that so you don't think I'm an airhead with a bouffant. But anyway, I got asked on stage about abortion. And I remember thinking, holy cow, this is the one topic that no one in the country can talk about, and I'm supposed to do it while standing here in an evening gown. Well, I did get through that, but I really realized from that point on, if we can talk with one another, we can come up with a lot of great compromise solutions. Now, that's not what a lot of the politicians want, but I believe that's what we as Americans want. And I believe this due date too late ballot initiative that will hopefully be on the ballot in 2020 is just one of those things that the vast majority of us can agree on. Studies show 75% of Americans do not want abortion after the first trimester, unless in the case of the health of the mother. And I believe that is something that we can all agree on, because right now in Colorado, when we can talk about it, when we can bring it up, which, by the way, is the name of my other radio show on 94.7 FM, because I believe in bringing it up. When we bring it up and we realize that Colorado is one of only seven states in the country that allows abortion up until the moment of birth for any reason. Science has become so advanced that the viability of a child begins 22 weeks, some even 21 weeks. So that's something that we can all talk about. This is not what is best for a woman. And honestly, one of the largest, you know, we all know about Kermit Gosnell, one of the largest late-term abortion clinics in the country is in Boulder. And that doctor has advertised that he will do an abortion for any reason up until the moment of birth, even if it harms the health of the mother, which late-term abortion almost always does. You know, when we decide to have this conversation, I want to blow away a couple of myths. One is that the majority of Americans are pro-choice. We've talked about that, and Allison was sharing how actually the largest swing now is happening amongst Democrats under the age of 40. When Roe v. Wade was passed, there was no ultrasound. Now, personally, as a person of faith, I do not think it is by coincidence that ultrasound was then invented shortly thereafter. Bernard Nathanson, the doctor who argued for Roe v. Wade in front of the Supreme Court, he had a conversion of sorts, not because of religious reasons, not because of political reasons, but because of scientific factual reasons. When he saw an ultrasound after arguing before the Supreme Court, he did a 180 and was against abortion after that. He even, by the way, shared the fact that a lot of the statistics that were drummed up to get that to pass in front of the Supreme Court were made up. He admitted that. So I think that's why we're seeing such a turn. Now, the question always comes down to, what about the mother? Well, certainly we as a society can do better to support the mother than to tell her only choice is to kill her unborn baby. I have not met one woman yet who's ever said, gosh, that's my number one choice. I really want that. No, we can give more options. So, you know, there's a couple of myths. One is that the majority of Americans are pro-choice. That's a myth. Over 90% of Republicans want to eliminate abortion after the first trimester. Also, a vast majority of Democrats do. Only 25% of Americans want abortion unrestricted for any reason at any time, which basically means that the Democratic presidential nominees are in the completely radical minority of Americans. And abortion, by the way, is down to its lowest level since Roe v. Wade. Why? Because people are realizing and choosing. And the day and age of the scarlet letter on a woman's chest, where she would be shunned by society, thrown out on the street, that is long gone. So don't believe some of the TV shows and histrionics. Here's one more thing I want to share with you. There's a myth that U.S. abortion laws are more restricted than Europe. We're actually far more radical than in Europe. In most European countries, abortions are only permissible in the first trimester, and after that, they're heavily restricted. Basically, in America, every state allows it up to 20 weeks, which is viability. And like I say, Colorado is one of seven states that allows it up to the moment of birth for any reason. You know what? Time to have this conversation with one another. Let's not be afraid to talk about the things that we've been told we can't talk about. And if anyone is listening, or we talk to anyone who has had an abortion, we can come in total kindness, grace, not vilify anyone, realize that they are carrying a huge burden, but help other women to make a different choice, which they would want to make if they could. So, you know, those are some of the things. Let's get back to the facts. I think my entire show today is going to be called Facts Versus Feelings, not Facts Versus Fiction, but Facts Versus Feelings, because there are so many facts that we can look at that really provide us with real solutions. You know, something we were talking about earlier in the show, looking at the year in review, we were talking about Time's Person of the Year, Greta Thunberg. And as a mom with a daughter the same age as Greta, my heart actually goes out to her because she's actually, I believe, terrified of a situation that the facts do not support, but her feelings are guiding her on. You know what? I want to start the next hour by talking about somebody who was also called the Person of the Year, who I would put my vote for. And that's Kendra Castillo, the STEM school student who gave his life for his friends to save them. And the gunman was taken down. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to have John Castillo on the air. That is Kendrick's father. And Kendrick was named the Person of the Year by the Washington Free Beacon. So coming up, we're going to have a real hero to talk about. Don't go anywhere. I'm Deborah Flores, sitting in for Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.